You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. 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 So good they call you a fake. How to command attention, monetize your talent stack, and become the uncontested authority in your niche. Josh Lisek, he's come on the podcast before. He talked about the art of ghostwriting. He basically has ghostwritten 78 books, all by people who are experts in their field, and he helped them basically become so good they call you a fake. And it's really true that sometimes people demonstrate such expertise in something, whether it's writing, building a business, or even being a dentist, lawyer, or whatever, that people think there's something else going on, that there's some fakery going on. And what I like about this podcast, because I have him on because of the book, and this book is so good, they call you a fake, he basically didn't hold back. A lot of times authors will hold back. They don't want to say everything because they want you to buy the book. Josh answered every question. You should still buy the book because there's a lot I didn't ask about, but here's Josh.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
All right, So Good They Call You a Fake by Josh Lisek. Josh, how's it going?
Pretty dandy, James. Thank you. Glad to be here.
And last time you were on, we talked a lot about your very, very successful career as a ghostwriter. You've written 78 books, or at least at that point. I love how on the first page of So Good They'll Call You Fake, you have someone tweeting at you, and I'm going to read it out loud. The tweet is, dude, you'll likely block me for this, but you know you didn't personally write 78 books. We know you didn't personally write 78 books. Why keep claiming you wrote 78 books? It's just weird. Josh, correct me if I'm wrong. Your point is, and I've experienced this also in my writing, sometimes the more you tell the truth when you have had an amazing story and an amazing life, people are always going to say it's fake or you made it up.
That's correct. When you're so good that people are calling you a fake, a fraud, a cheat, a liar, a scammer, that's how you know you've made it. You've got something special.
Why did this guy not believe that you wrote 78 books? So like, for instance, I've written 25 books and you write books, you know, you're a ghostwriter. You write books like every day. So like, I could believe, if you told me you wrote 200 books, I would believe you.
Yes. And there's people I know that have written more than 130, 140, 150 books. And it really comes down to their process. Everything is systematizable. When you have a step-by-step with no step skipped system, it can be relatively easy to create what seem to other people like unbelievable claims of miracle working.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you have this experience in two different ways. One is you've done a miracle. You've written 78 books, and that's why this guy was calling you a fake or a liar. The other is that you've ghostwritten books for amazing, successful people. You've seen genius at work and the commonalities of all these people who have done such amazing, quote unquote, miracles. This book now, you have a whole, you've realized what it takes to be a genius in an industry and then be successful at being a genius in an industry. So is that the basis of this book? Am I describing it correctly?
That's 100% accurate. Yes. It's a combination of not what I have been able to do in myself in my own career as a ghostwriter, but a ghostwriter works on behalf of other people. The type of people that come to me are deep experts in their niche, in their space, at their thing. But the trouble is they have not quite been able to leverage a system, leverage productization in order to, frankly, monetize their expertise. And they're not really authorities, many of them. They are, quote unquote, the best kept secret in their space. And they're tired of people who have optimized for revenue over results. Meanwhile, they're focusing on being good at what they do and helping people as much as they can. But they're charging $150 a session. Their competitors are charging $15,000 and requiring a 6-month agreement. But because those people are advertising and they're doing all the funnels and they're doing the retargeting and they're doing short form content and they're doing all the viral stuff, they're the ones who are making all the money, even though they are not getting any results close to the miracles that are being worked by, frankly, the no-names. And it's those people that I am most interested in helping monetize.
So you help the so-called no-names who are miracle workers, who are geniuses, to basically, you know, you give them the tools to monetize. Like you ghostwrite their books, you help them make a course, you help them market, all this kind of stuff.
That's right. But the key is not just writing the book, not just creating the course, not just building the coaching and consulting offers and that sort of thing. We realize that the sort of results they've been able to create are so good they're called a fake by normies or by haters or by anonymous trolls and critics online. And that's the reason why they have not self-promoted more. I don't want to be called a fake. That's an affront to me. I've poured 25 years of my life into this work. I don't want to lose my license or lose this or being unable to afford, so they'll stay hidden in the shadows and they won't write their book and they'll still charge $150 a session. They'll give it away for free. They'll help for free as their side hustle while they have an 8-to-5 where they grow their meager side hustle income. But what this book is, it's a reframe. It's the idea that you can become an energy monster and thrive on all kinds of attention, and you want people to call you a fake. Haters, cultivated organically, are the best marketers you could possibly find. And so getting that gets you attention. Attention from haters, trolls, and critics, yes, but also from people who see your courage, who see your bravery despite the hate, and they say, wow, this is the person. They see the cartoonishly fake veneer, hence the picture of the Mona Lisa with the Groucho Marx disguise glasses. At a glance, you look cartoonishly fake. When they look closer, they realize you're the real deal.
And so I wish I had talked to you about this 10 years ago, honestly. Like I had grappled with this so much, but let's talk about a specific example. You have so many great stories in the book. Give me a specific example of genius systematized, and then your work with this person.
Yes, one of the most common ones that I talk about is Dr. Philip Ovadia's book, Stay Off My Operating Table. It's won several awards. It's about 20,000 copies sold in about a year and a half, which...
Great title, Stay Off My Operating Table.
Yes. And there's a couple of chapters where we go into that particular example of that book.
Tell me more. Tell me his story. It was a great story.
Yes. So Dr. Philip Ovadia is a cardiothoracic surgeon, performed over 3,000 heart surgeries. So this is an individual who has the deep expertise. We began working together. He had about 1,500 Twitter followers and like combined followers, not even the presence on other platforms. But he came to me and he wanted to share his story. He wanted to teach people about the link between their metabolic health and heart health, because he was often operating on people who you would not think would need an open heart surgery.
What was the instigating incident that made him realize he needed to do something?
Yes. And that story, of course, is in the book. I think it's the beginning of chapter, yeah. Somewhere in chapter two, where he was operating on a 38-year-old woman, Dr. Philip Ovadia was, and she passed away on his operating table at 38 years old, had a couple of children. And as doctors will do, he had a conversation with the family afterwards, and they were shocked, appalled, horrified, and mortified that this has happened. And it was then that he realized, okay, he needs to talk to people about diet and what they eat, because he'd found out that there's significant nutritional illiteracy amongst the sort of people who need a heart surgery. Like, I can't just eat, you know, hungry man meals and food out of, packages, and carrot cake isn't a vegetable, really. And he was surprised that this is the current state of nutritional literacy in America. He wanted to solve this problem so that they would not need heart surgery, that they would be able to stay off his operating table, given the title of the book. But he had all manner of ideas and insights and lessons. And I learned this thing from this person. I learned this over here, and this is my own story. And it was kind of a hodgepodge, a mismatch of ideas and stories and experiences that needed to be documented in one place and ordered so that anyone could pick up the book, grasp his worldview, have their beliefs replaced where it made sense before they got to any particular advice, and then give people multiple paths in order to implement the advice. And so we call it Dr. Philip Ovadia's metabolic health system. And there's a course we created that's actually called that, but it also appears inside the book as well.
And you made the point at this time that geniuses have a system. They systematize what they do. And what you were doing was basically helping him kind of verbalize what that system was, as you did with all of your clients and many stories in the book. But okay, I just wanted to say that what people are learning by listening to this is that if you want to be a genius, you want to be considered a genius, you want to be so good they call you fake, is that take that expertise, systematize it, and then figure out how to write it and the stories and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. And the way to systematize is to work backwards from the end state, from what looks to people like a miracle. Like, there's no way that's possible. And an example of that, there's an individual that's mentioned in the book, a reviewer and a customer of Dr. Ovadia's, in which they mentioned they lost a significant amount of belly weight over the weekend by a few simple diet changes learned from the book. In a weekend, yes. Like, I think like Thursday night through like Monday morning. And that level of weight loss and inches off the waist, it, according to the experts, takes 28 days. So it's like, psh, no way that happened. That's a liar. That's a scam, fraud. No way that happened. He's a quack. And Dr. Vady realized that that is exactly what he wants. He wants the attention of experts and competitors calling him a fake. And there's no way that that actually happened. Like, look at this liar over here. People are losing this much weight. What? You can lose that much weight? It's kind of like when the Viagra pill was first marketed, and they would say, if you're experiencing an erection lasting more than 4 hours, I could be for 4 hours. Whoa. And that warning was, in fact, a sales pitch.
Do you think Pfizer planned that?
Yes.
As a marketing?
In my opinion, yes.
That's so funny. All right. Sorry. So go ahead.
Yes. But the point is starting with the end in mind. So like, to get a result like that, where you're able to lose a significant amount of weight in inches over a weekend, that's the ultimate outcome that's achieved. One of the outcomes, of course. The major one from his perspective is, you don't need me to slice your chest open with a handsaw. That's kind of a dramatic outcome. Like, I don't want that, right? But working backwards, what happened before that? What happened before that? What happened before that? There's a metaphor that I use of Lego sets, right? How a child can build a sophisticated castle or a spaceship or a robot that works and all the gear mechanisms work. Kids can't do that unless they have a system. And of course, back in the 1990s, it was called Lego System. It was the brand that was marketed, Lego sets were. So imagine on the box, you see the end result, the outcome, the cool thing to build. Now, if you were to have that, well, okay, what comes before that? Well, the end product, 100% completely built set. Well, you might remove one of the lights. Okay, what now it comes off. And then imagine taking apart a Lego set. This is what you must do with your results. This is how you can create a system for genius. Your following metaphor, your results are the Lego set. Now remove one piece at a time and document everything you're doing step by step in reverse. And then now you've got yourself, flip it back around, you now have a step-by-step with no step skipped system in order to go from 500 pieces all across the floor to a beautiful castle that a six-year-old or a five-year-old can build by following those instructions step-by-step with no step skipped. And I realize that this process has to come before writing, ghostwriting a book. And this is my contribution to the world is I don't just write books. I do all the stuff that comes before that in order for the book to be so good. Any internet stranger can use it and get the results, even if they don't have a conversation with you. But it's the results they get that will inspire them to want to purchase your course and to get your coaching offer and your consulting. And that's how the book has been such a boon for Dr. Ovedia's business. And he's been wildly financially successful beyond all anticipation because of the system that the book teaches and the course teaches. And he can walk people through as part of his coaching, part of his consulting. You have this one product that now can be multiplied. He has leverage now because he has a system. If you just have a book with a bunch of random and vague ideas, people will read it and they'll say, I felt so inspired, James, but I don't know what to do next exactly. How do I do this? And that's the number one most common review on self-help books.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So, and like in your book, you have a chapter, the Genius System Design Table, where you lay it out. You say like the Genius System, step one is what the promise of the system is. Genius System, step two, all the steps with, you know, all the steps of the system, basically. And then Genius System Design, step three, perceptible value. So talk about that and talk about how you did it with either Dr. Ovedia or pick someone else or whatever.
Yes. And so before we even wrote a single chapter, before we laid out the table of contents, I asked him, what do you want people to be able to know or do differently after this book? And he joked, well, I don't want to have to operate on them. I said, oh, so stay off your operating table. Yeah, exactly. Oh, and then there's the title of the book. That's the
Excellent.
Promise. So this is binary. There's a few things in life that are actually black and white. And for people who want to maximally monetize their expertise, this is one of the things that is black and white. How do people know your stuff worked? That answer to that question, well, because they got this result. In Dr. Ovedia's case, they don't need heart surgery. That's pretty stark. You either need your sternum sawed open in half, or you don't need that. You don't have that outcome, or you don't even make it to the hospital because of a cardiac event. But look at in business coaching, in divorce law, life coaching, management consulting, software as a service, marketing startup. How do people know that the thing worked? Well, it either did this or it didn't. Okay, then what you're going to do is you're going to promise people that they're going to get this specific result. Now, this is where I lose beginners because they say, well, I don't know what results I can actually help people get. I haven't done that experience yet. I say that this book is not for beginners. This book is for people who've already gotten results, who know how good they are, but the world doesn't.
although it could be the case that someone, you know, might not think that they're a genius, but then when they really think about it in this systematized way, they realize, oh, I have helped people. And I have helped people in consistent ways, and this is how I did it.
Yes, definitely. And then, like with Dr. Ovedia, he had been a heart surgeon, but he hadn't been in business for himself. Like he wanted to launch a telehealth practice and use the book to do that. There's other people I mentioned in the book that they were towards the beginning of either of their career, or they were transitioning from one, let's say, vertical industry to another. But they had already had the deep expertise. And it's usually people who don't have any self-doubt at all that I see that as a red flag. And it's people who are humble, frankly, who have a little bit of the Dunning-Kruger effect, the Dunning-Kruger syndrome, the imposter syndrome. Those people are the real deal. I'm talking about the sort of people who cold message me on Twitter. So, Joshua, I just graduated from high school. I think I want to earn $100,000 ghostwriting a book. What do I do?
Just start writing books, actually. That would be the advice I give that guy.
Yes. And that's an excellent piece of advice, is whatever you want to do for people, we'll do it for yourself first. Actually get the results, or you will be a fake. Not you'll call it a fake, you'll actually be a fake.
Well, and actually, like, in terms of writing books, like, I don't know, we've talked before about it, but like, my experience was I had to write like 3 or 4 awful books that never got published, never saw the light of day, before I even started to be halfway decent at writing a sentence. So,
yes.
So, but you're right, you have to just do things in order to be good at things.
Yes. And that's when, once you're good at something, whether you've gotten paid for it or not, that's when you can begin the documenting process. You have this beautiful result. Okay. Well, working backwards, what had to happen in order for that end state to be achieved, whether it's a transformation in, you know, health or wealth or wellness or business or whatever your industry is, what is that fantastic result that you can promise to other people within Federal Trade Commission guidelines and what's allowed? Yeah. What's allowed by law? Don't want to get in trouble there. But then working backwards, what a lot of people do, and I have a couple of examples of how not to do it inside So Good They Call You a Fake, is they will just throw up the promise. Look, you know, by purchasing my product or my book or hiring me for my services, you'll get this amazing result. And what they actually get, the consumer, is a hodgepodge of inspirational stories and tired advice with cliches. And you should try this, and maybe this will work for you, or this, you know, or just do it. I can't want it more than you do. You need to just try harder. And the promise is only reached by people who are going to make it anyway. And it's those people's testimonials that are all over the sales page for the product. Mm. And so you've got 99% of people it's a complete waste of money for. What they can find for free on Google or YouTube is superior to whatever's in that $5,000 course. Sorry, excuse for a course, really. And the people who are in it, we're going to make it anyway.
So really, this is where it gets to step two, which is list all the steps of your process.
Exactly. And often some of those steps are belief changes, information, knowledge that people have. So in Dr. Philip Avedia's case, we can't just get right to, okay, here's what you should eat. Because that's what everybody wants, right? But you have to give them what they need as well. And one of the things people need to understand is how the healthcare system is optimized for subscriptions, sometimes called prescriptions. Really what they are is subscriptions to symptom management. And so that's how the money is made, to alleviate a symptom, to quote unquote cure. How are you going to pay for all that R&D you did on those drugs? That money has to come from somewhere. And so by teaching people the way the system really works, they can begin to, number one, distrust what terrible advice they've been getting from mainstream doctors. And number two, they can take their health into their own hands, which are requirements for the advice he's going to dispense later on.
I have to say, Airbnb has changed my life. I just love staying in Airbnbs. Like, in about a month, I'm going to Cocoa Beach, which is right next to Cape Canaveral. I'm going to watch some rocket launches. I'm going to, of course, be staying in a very nice Airbnb on the beach. And it's just such a great experience. Like, the whole world is available to us now because of Airbnb. But whenever I'm at an Airbnb, I always realize, you know, the home that I left to come to this Airbnb, I could be making money on that right now by hosting and being an Airbnb myself. So, and I've known people, I had a friend who basically, you know, made a living from turning his home into an Airbnb. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, you do have an Airbnb there. And it can easily fit into your lifestyle, and it's a great way to earn some money. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. The famous Abraham Lincoln quote says, "Good things come to those who wait." I wonder, did he really say that? Jay, did he really say that? Can you look that up? Regardless of who said it, that's only part of the quote. The full quote is, "Good things come to those who wait, but only the things left by those who hustle." Well, if you're a business owner and want the best people on your team, the same applies. And listen, I've interviewed 1,500 people now and a lot of entrepreneurs. I can safely say the one thing consistent among all entrepreneurs and CEOs, the successful ones, is that it's all about the people you surround yourself. If you hire well, you're going to have a great business. And, you know, thankfully, ZipRecruiter puts the hustle in your hiring, so you find qualified candidates fast. This is so important, and I want you to try it. You could try it as a potential employer or employee. You can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter's smart technology finds top talent for your roles right away. Immediately after you post your job, if you're hiring, ZipRecruiter's matching technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I will tell you that I signed up on ZipRecruiter as a potential employee. You know, I just wanted to see how it works. And right away, it started matching me with really amazing potential employers. So give it a try at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Let ZipRecruiter give you the hiring hustle you need. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/James to try it for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. But let me ask you a question. Like, and this is almost a question for Peter Ovadia, but this is why you're so good at like ghostwriting his stuff. I'm going to ask you this question. Do you think that most doctors are maliciously, like doctors know eat healthy is a good way to stay healthy. So do you think they're being malicious? Like, what's the average doctor do that's wrong in terms of giving health advice?
Well, something that Dr. Ovadia points out, first of all, is that, and this is one of those beliefs that like people need to know. So this is part of that the system, the step-by-step system, beliefs and behaviors, both of those things. And one of the beliefs that's a step in his system is understanding the fact that doctors in medical school get about one class session's worth of nutrition advice and understanding of what that actually is.
But isn't it common sense, though, that good nutrition is good for you? Like, you and I know it, so how come these doctors don't know it?
That's a good question. What Dr. Ovadia points out is the advice that they give is often what's in alignment with guidelines. So they, here's what this says. You know, here's what you should do.
Like food pyramid stuff.
Yes. And it's like, oh, okay, well, lots of bread, and you know, lots of bread at the bottom. The grains are really important. Oh, okay, I'll get lots of grains. And then what does the average, like, go look at the average person's shopping cart. Some people are following the advice. Other people think they're following the advice, and so everything is white flour, enriched, you know, bleached. Like, oh, okay, well, this is good, but there's a disconnect between prevention of what they're experiencing and treatment of it. And what Dr. Ovadia points out is so often when people are coming to doctors, it's way too late in the process for a lot of people. And it's like, you really need to change your dietary habits. And it's like, well, can you just give me a pill? Yeah, here's a prescription I can offer you. So right now, there is this really big, exciting thing about a drug, I believe it's called semaglutide. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but it's a weight loss pill. Give me that weight loss pill. And so we're now seeing a lot of doctors are prescribing a weight loss pill because it's all about subscriptions. And of course, this is a perfect product market fit because people need to stay on it long term. Because if they go off it, it is said, not only will their symptoms get back to where they were, but they will significantly worsen. Mm. And that's a perfect product market fit. It's a subscription product.
Right.
And it's not malicious intent. Dr. Vady points out physicians have 5-10 minutes, maybe tops, to try to convey all of this information to a patient before the next one comes along. So the incentive structure is not great for the doctors or for the patients. And this is why Dr. Vady has opened up a telehealth clinic so that he can have extended two-hour long conversations with people. And he would go over their blood work and tell them what every single number means and what it's likely going to lead to. 2 hours with someone. You can't get that inside of the system. And it's fantastic what he's able to offer. And that's the direction that he wants people to go. But before anyone is going to be willing to spend 2 hours with a doctor, pay out of pocket for advice like this, go over their blood work and not go through the system, there's a lot that they need to understand about what's going on in their body, what specific food does to them. And so that's why the beliefs in his case all have to come first, and they're really part of the system. In hypnosis, it's called the chain of beliefs. where they're like dominoes. If you believe this, then the next thing that you can believe is this. After that, the next thing that's believable for you is this. And you just line them all up, knock them all down, all the way to the end result of now their behaviors have changed.
Is that what a hypnotist does? Like, what does a hypnotist do?
That's what a hypnotist does. So I'm as far as I know, I'm the only certified professional ghostwriter and certified hypnotist in the world. And it boggles my mind because they're one and the same. My opinion is that books are long-form hypnosis scripts because you're changing beliefs to drive new behaviors,
right,
which is what a hypnosis session, frankly, is. In a hypnosis session, you need to have rapport. The person needs to trust you, that they understand, you get me. And often, that means at the very outset of the chapter of the book, the first chapter of the book, the very opening of the session, the hypnotist or the author, but I repeat myself, I must deliver what's called a yes set, which is a series of facts or statements or questions that the hypnotist author knows are true for the reader.
What's an example of that? Like, let's say I'm giving a talk about something. What would be three yes statements I can use?
So one technique I've used a lot is opening with three questions. Have you ever, and then you ask a question that you know the answer to that is yes for the reader. Well, what about...
So let's say I'm talking about entrepreneurship. Like, have you ever wanted to start your own business? Have you ever wanted to have financial freedom? Have you ever wanted to be recognized for helping millions of people with something you made?
Oh, that's a perfect example of a yes set. And the broader, the better. So that way you could get more people going, oh, yeah. So like the rule of three, yes, that's perfect. That's perfect.
And then what's next for a hypnotist?
Yes. So once you've got that, that would be like the hook, the pull them in a little bit. Oh, okay, I'm paying attention now. This is relevant for me. I'm tuned in. Because if it's not relevant, if not tuned in, then the suggestions aren't going to take and their mind's going to be wandering and stressed out about something else. So what I do, and I don't think I say this in the book, but what I do is I take the structure of a hypnosis session and I point out that this is a structure that your opening chapter of your book needs to follow, where you've got the hook that pulls them in and says, okay, I'm engaged now. And then from there, you need to point out what it is that they're struggling with that you are going to help them resolve. Basically, what's in it for me? Well, what's in it for me is it helping you with this issue. And that's where you would talk about the problem. So with your example, James, of have you ever, do you want to, wouldn't it be neat if, like, well, yeah, of course. And then you would just go to, but, and then you would lay out what the problem is.
But like, you have a job that takes 90 hours a week, so you feel you don't have time, but you're worried about the mortgage and the bills and so on, so stuff like that.
Exactly. And you lay out, okay, well, yeah, that's true for me as well, mm-hmm. right? So the idea is to keep as many people as possible going, oh, yeah, that's exactly what's happening for me. It's relevant, you know? And by the way, this is also perfect for sales pages, the same structure. And realize that the most effective persuaders have the same templates for everything. So a hypnosis session, the opening chapter of a book, and a sales page. It is all the same structure, or it could be, or it ought to be, rather, because they're all buying something. They're buying a new belief and new behaviors, or they're buying reading the rest of the book, or they're buying the product itself to use it and get value from it. So after you lay out the problem, so people realize, oh, that's why. Okay, this person's going to help me with this. You need to agitate. You need to agitate. Now, problem, agitation, solution is a tried and true copywriting formula. But part of this larger structure, you understand why it works and what else has to be part of it. So after you've laid out the problem, agitate. Make people feel it. Let them, in a multisensory way, see it, hear it, touch it, taste it, smell it even. Why, in what ways is this the problem? Multisensory persuasion. So you lay out, oh, you got 90 hours. Okay, that's... You know, 90 hours a week, that's really hard. Okay, that's a problem. But how do they know it's a problem? This is where you can begin to like draw on memories and allow people to assign things that they've actually done, seen, said, and heard, and felt to what you're talking about right here. So they go, oh, he's reading my mind. He knows. So you could say, like, maybe your spouse said this to you, or you heard your kids say this, or when your boss was talking, you felt this. And you can call up those actual sensory experiences because the senses are based in the subconscious mind. That's where they're rooted. So once you can just reach into someone's mind by tapping into sensory memories, you've got them. this is an advanced technique, but it works so well. Once you get to this point, pulling out people's memories, and memories, of course, are stored in the subconscious. So now
how do you know what the memories are? Are you just saying that most people have similar ways of encountering a problem.
Yes, and you want to be vague. And a good example of vague, I'm going to borrow from novelists. The best novelists give hardly any information at all about the setting, about the characters. They just drop a couple of adjectives to describe the look and the feel of the place. They know that you give people just enough to imagine their own character in their own heads. They have ownership of that character. They see what that character looks like, as opposed to overly descriptive descriptions that amateur first-time novelists and fiction writers tend to go into, where they will describe how many strands of hair are on the girl's face and exactly the look of and shape of her chin, and her nose was this long and she said this high, her shoulders this wide, she was carrying a bag that was this color, and all this detail. We don't need any of that. That's anti-persuasive. What you want are, she looked as if she was about to, and then give a description of, oh, okay, I've seen that before. I know what she looks like now. Maybe a little bit of color, just enough for people to imagine and kind of create their own character. This, by the way, is why people prefer, most often, they prefer the novel to the movie, because they already had the character created in their head.
Ah, yeah.
Because the novelist gave just enough information for them to make the character their own. And then when they see someone else's version of it, that's not what that character looks like. That's not how they behave. Because the novelist gave just enough information. It's kind of like those activities for kids where it's numbered lines and you have to take your pencil and you have to draw from one to the next and like you fill in the picture. It's kind of like that. You allow the person's brain to fill in the picture. So when you're agitating about the problem with your audience, with your readers, with your patient, with your customers reading your sales page, what we want to do is to give multisensory call-outs, but not be overly specific. Your boss, who is this, who is just like this, he sounded like this, oh, and it was a he, your boss said this to you, these exact words, you're sitting in your cubicle, and you're sitting at your computer, you have two Macs, like, oh, that's way too descriptive. Right. That's like an amateur novelist, right? So don't write like an amateur novelist, write like a pro.
And really, the point of this is not, I mean, it almost sounds like we're evil talking about this, like how to manipulate people into doing what we want, but the point is, like, even take Dr. Ovadia, for instance, he really wants people to be healthy, but he's got to go through 4 or 5 decades of brainwashing. Like, so he might, in this case, using him as an example, he might say something like, everybody around you has been eating Doritos since you were a kid. Of course you're going to join in, or whatever he says. He's going to kind of call on blame their environment and maybe the way they grew up or whatever on their bad health situation, which probably many people can relate to.
Yes. The most persuasive, I say this elsewhere, I point out that the most persuasive statements are absolute truths that people know are true. And so it is difficult to manipulate most people most of the time effectively. And politicians know this. This is why they get hyper-niched down with their campaigns. They try to manipulate a particular niche or a sub-niche with manipulative messaging. They try to capture different ones because it's difficult to unethically persuade everyone with falsehoods, because enough people realize, wait a second, this person's pulling my leg here. But when you have the best interest in mind, you can tell the truth. And when anyone doesn't resonate with it, you don't mind. You don't have to sell everyone. You don't have to persuade everyone. You're just looking for the people who resonate. There'll be people who are like, what are you talking about? I wear a continuous glucose monitor. I don't eat any carbohydrates at all beyond 50 grams a day. And I walk 25,000 steps a day. Doritos, what are you talking about? So that person's not in his market, and that's okay. So he doesn't need that person to buy his product.
Okay, what's next?
So after the agitation, this is where you introduce a solution. This is the, and I can take it all away, and there's a better way, and I found the way, and that was me. And then now that's what Dr. Ovadia does. So he transitions in the opening chapter of his book from the agitation to the introduction of the solution, where it's his story is often the story of his patients. So he knows in mind who exactly he wants reading this book. And so when you know exactly who the reader who you want them to be, you can speak directly to them and to nobody else. So we don't want to write a book that's for everyone. We want to key in on this one type of person. More than that, we'll enjoy it, of course. But the key in is one type of person. In that case, Dr. Ovadia's primary market is like a 45 to 50-year-old male who is dealing with their parents' heart issues. They've ate like their parents did, and now dad's had a heart attack and mom's on three different blood pressure medications and isn't getting around anymore. And they both got arthritis and it seems like it might be diet related from what they're hearing about. And, oh no, maybe we shouldn't be eating the way that we've been eating. Oh, and now it's my turn. Oh no. And their doctor recently said, oh, it looks like you're elevated. There might be a problem here. You might want to check on that. See you in a year. Get your statins. See you in a year. Just do whatever. Here's some statins. See you in a year. And they know, okay, something is wrong here. So within what Dr. Vita does, when he introduces a solution, it's in the midst of the agitation. Here's how bad it can feel. Here's how it felt for me. I was the fat doctor. I was morbidly obese. I was in worse shape than many of the patients I was operating on, is how Dr. Vita's story go. But what I learned was, and introduced a solution now. So there's that rapport. It's like, oh, he's one of us. He's one of us. Anytime you can do that he's one of us or she's one of us, that's always effective. Introducing the solution. This is where a lot of authors I find go wrong, is they don't know what their exact system solution is. It's like, well, the book is kind of like a bunch of different things. You know, you could try this and you should do this. It's not like one coherent solution, one complete system, one full framework, one end-to-end tutorial, one step-by-step process to get to that particular outcome. It was difficult writing those types of books for people who didn't have a system. Because it was complete chaos. They would just say, well, it's all mindset over and over and over, chapter after chapter. It's all, you know, just got to try hard. You just got to want it bad enough. It's all mindset, growth mindset. It's mindset after one chapter after the next. That doesn't get people anywhere. So what we recognized is before we wrote any of this, we worked on Dr. Avedia's metabolic health system. And this is the same process. What is that system for a genius? And that's why I don't talk about how to write a book until the 8th chapter in this book. Because it's all the foundational beliefs I want you to believe before you adopt the new behaviors to adopt as part of becoming so good they call you a fake.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
I thought it was fascinating because it's true. Like, probably Dr. Avedia didn't verbalize his system before, but once he had one, this is what I call the spoken wheel approach. Like, once you have that core of the wheel, you have spokes. You have the book, the course, the video, the coaching business, the consulting business, the product, whatever. So what you essentially do is you create the wheels for these people who are geniuses at what they do. Dr. Avedia is one example. There was another example of a guy who's like the cheapest divorce lawyer around. Great example. There was one woman, I forget what exactly she was doing. But what were some of the other examples in the book?
Oh yeah, we talk about internet entrepreneurs and digital marketers and marketing agencies and business consultants and management consultants.
No, but what were some of the other examples like Dr. Avedia? Like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So right after Dr. Avedia is Eric Anderton, who is a construction industry executive coach, leadership training consultant. He's doing very well for himself in that space, despite the fact that he's never been on a construction site in his life. He actually is a historian, if you can believe that. So wait a second. How do you become a construction executive coach without ever having worked on a job site before? That's his situation. And yet he's got this complete system that is so effective. Not only is it a book, but what's happening is CEOs of these companies are flying him out, and he's giving multiple day presentations on the book, teaching it to his staff and making sure that they get it and then they can go carry that into their day-to-day labor. He's a fantastic example.
Why did he want to be a construction executive coach if he's never been on a construction site?
Because it's the construction industry that builds the world from a literal perspective.
Yeah.
And so often the sorts of stories that resonated with him as a history teacher, as a professional historian, were people who were building the world in one way or another.
Yeah.
And so it's a hop, skip, and a jump to go from reading about an ancient king to who the ancient king's architect was and building the vision of the king. And there is that natural transition from history to construction that might not be obvious until you learn about the sorts of stories that a historian might be learning about.
What was the insight that he got from history that he was able to systematize to the modern day?
It's that times change and people don't, and that the downfall of an empire is the same as the downfall of a construction company. Really any company, but it's construction particularly because of the resonance between the visionary and the one who builds the vision, and often literally. And it's construction executives who, they're an interesting breed of, breed because they see what's possible, and there's so many shenanigans they have to put up with to go from, we see what this place could look like, to, okay, well, there's the zoning issues, and then there's a local government, and there's a state government. What about federal government? What about, and it's just all of these things that have to get jumped through in order to produce the end result. And often the sorts of problems that plague that type of company, they are not practical business problems. They are leadership problems. It's mismanagement. It's all the sorts of things that Eric knows from studying history are problems and how to solve them. It's like the vizier giving counsel to the leader, and it's bad advice. And how do you deal with that situation in a real world, modern day construction sort of a scenario? It just maps. And that's what's so cool about the system approach, is when you understand that you can be in a completely different industry, but map your expertise onto another industry, you can become the authority in that niche just by building a system that's repeatable, produces predictable results. Now, a lot of people probably haven't heard of Dr. Philip Ovidia or Eric Anderton, and I try to shy away from my celebrity clients in the book because those are interesting to me and they're not useful to most people. I don't want to be a tabloid. What's right. most interesting is taking people that no one's ever heard of and they've become the authority in their niche. How in the world does that happen? That's what's interesting.
Yeah, and like I'm looking at Dr. Ovidia's Twitter account right now. He's got, you said he had 1,500 followers when you started working with him. He's got 56,000 followers right now.
That's right. And one of the things that he does with his book is he repurposes content from the book as tweets and as threads and as video scripts.
You know, what I'm interested in also is you have this chapter in the book on basically how to be a good coach. You know, so you talk about writing, you talk about ghostwriting, you talk about courses. But I am curious, like when it comes to, what's the difference between a good coach and a bad coach?
Yes, so this is the information environment from which I wrote that chapter is having done something that looks like coaching myself. I'm not going to call it exactly coaching, but it's something like a coaching. It's like a coaching style offer. But also, so many coaches over the years have come to me to write their books, be it health, wealth, wellness, business, management, entrepreneurship, whatever the case may be. And I've seen the best and I've seen the worst. And what the worst do, now, this isn't in terms of results. Often the most financially successful coaches are the worst actual coaches that I found. They've optimized for revenue over results. So they're the ones who have the funnels dialed in and they're on all the platforms and they're doing the major JV deals with everybody. It's the ones who are spectacular at what they do, charging like $50 an hour, minimum 2 hours. Oh, and by the way, if you book 4 hours, it's half price. You know, that's sort of like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Even though they can create a miracle. Well, it looks like a miracle, but they're just using their expertise to do this. Now, to answer your question, good coach versus a bad coach is all hype. You got to be motivated. You just got to want it bad enough. You just got to try. Mindset, mindset, mindset. I can't want this more than you do. And there's an opening story of an actual coach that said those words to me. And that mindset is quite common in coaching. And it's like, well, you know, you're not paying for results. You're paying for my time is a reframe that I hear often in the coaching space from the authors that I talk to who are coaches or coaches who are aspiring authors and why they want to do it different. And that's often why they come to me. Joshua, I'm an expert. Nobody gets results like I can, but nobody knows who I am. It's the schmucks and the actual fakes who are at the top of the industry who are giving terrible advice to people. So often ghostwriting clients of mine who are coaches, their clients are the failures of the famous coaches who washed up and couldn't make those systems work and then come to my clients and instantly checks out for them and they get the results. A good coach will not let you fail. A good coach makes failure almost impossible for you. An example I give is one of my golf coaches that I had who used elaborate, kind of ridiculous looking, perhaps Groucho Marx style products golf, but in the golf industry, map that metaphor onto golf, you could not hit a slice. It is not possible to hit a slice with this that apparatus that he would strap up and set up using products he probably paid less than $50 for at Walmart or at the Home Depot setting these up. It's not possible to hit a slice. It was not possible for me to do it wrong. That's good coaching. It's not possible to do it wrong. And map that onto high performance coaching or to business coaching or to entrepreneurship or to health or to wealth. And you realize that it's not about wanting it bad enough or using your willpower, being motivated. I can't want this more than you do, Joshua, the typical rah-rah coach. It is walking with the person to set up particular systems and safeguards and unbreakable rules around the issue they want to work on. So it's not possible for them to do it wrong. And then the coach is there to make sure that they keep that system, that they keep that rule in place and present in as real time as possible, rather than coaching calls, which are an annoyance. At least in the sphere that I hang out on Twitter, coaches are, let's say, on the way out, because it is known that a coach is somebody you pay to tell you that you don't want it bad enough. And then they'll collect their money and they meet with you once a week. And then I'm available via the phone and not actually getting results. And it's more like, well, I'm paying somebody for something, so I guess I feel like I'm making progress. It's really a cope, is what it is by and large.
So like if someone wants to be a coach, what's the first thing they can take out of this to basically become a better coach?
Anyway, let's start with the end in mind. How does your student know that your coaching worked? That's the first thing. And that's the opening question, the binary, the black and white. How do they know it worked? Like, well, they either achieved their goal or they didn't. Now, this is an alignment problem with incentives. Coaches are incentivized to not get results because coaches get paid for the coaching, right?
It's like therapy.
Yes. So the idea is you need the person to suck as long as possible. Otherwise, you don't get paid. So that's the first thing is you need to eliminate, okay, the longer people work with me, the more money I get paid. Oh, so therefore I should make sure my services don't work, but make people feel good about the motivation they get, but then dies immediately after the session. And that's why I say that coaches who make the most money are doing that, because they understand that if you just keep people hanging on, stringing them along long enough, you can drain them. They become a fantastic subscription product. So start with a completely different approach, which is, I am a coach to get results. This is why I like hypnotists, because it's after one, two, or three sessions, the problem is resolved. It's done. So the person never needed the expensive therapy for years and years because the issue is resolved. But start with the end in mind. How do they know it worked? And then you work backwards step by step with no step skipped. And now you imagine that somebody's going to be following this process. Where are they going to screw it up? Where are they going to screw up their process? And then what does it look like to prevent them from screwing themselves up? What is that process? So with the golf example, a step-by-step process from that perspective is the golf swing. And the outcome is, did the ball go as far as it should have and the direction it should have if this person was any good? So it was either 150 yards to the right in the woods, or it was right down the center and was a beautiful shot. So there's not really any, well, maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. No, we either see that it did or it didn't. So from his perspective, every movement that I make on the backswing and on the downswing, even the setup, there's the setup, there's the backswing, there's the top, and then there's the downswing, and there's the follow through. Every stage of the way, I can screw something up as the person being coached. I can screw everything up. Now, a coach who optimizes for revenue is only going to try to fix like one little thing at a time. Go, oh, you know, you did that. Next week, we'll work on this other thing. And then it's like, you know, 6 months later, I'm not slicing the ball as far, but I paid a lot of money to not slice the ball as far. Versus what this coach did, which is set up these sophisticated apparatuses around me as I'm doing the golf swing. So I have to take the club up to a certain spot, which is the correct spot. And I have to swing a certain way and I have to follow through a certain way. It's not possible to screw it up. Those boundaries, those restrictions are what were so helpful.
And then when you had to go on a real golf course, was there like muscle memory kicked in so that, you know, it kept you in line even though you didn't have the apparatus around you?
Yes, he gave me specific drills to do. Drills that I could do over and over and over. And again, they look kind of ridiculous. Like what is he doing over there? Do we need to call somebody? You know, with those drills, but they work. They bring what that was from the coaching experience into the real world. So think about if you, the coach, are not there with the person, they're executing themselves, what could be drilled into them to help make it second nature, to help the new way feel natural and the old way that was the old habit feel unnatural and even plain wrong? What can you do to make perfect execution, or at least superior execution to what was they were previously doing, like clockwork? Without them having to think about it, without them having to remember everything and pretend that you're there. It's a completely different way to coach because it's not really about like asking questions like a lot of coaching is thought to be, or like digging deep or any that sort of stuff. It's like, okay, well, what do you want? All right, I'm gonna not let you not get there. And that's my job as the coach, to not let you not get to where you want to go. That's my job.
And so this is all great. So basically, So Good They Call You a Fake by Josh Lisek. Command attention, monetize your talent stack, and become the uncontested authority in your niche. It's really good advice because there's so many, I always complain about this in like the self-help space. Like there's so many BS self-help books, for instance, that don't really move the needle on what it is you want to accomplish in life. And that could be applied to anything, like whether it's health or you know, any of the examples from your clients, golf, you have the examples from the divorce lawyer, from the construction coach. Basically what you do is you step-by-step tell people how to think about their core skills, the things that their wheel, the core of what they're good at, how to systematize what they're good at. And you teach people how to do that in this book, and then how to monetize it by looking at all the different spokes, whether it's book, course, coaching business, consulting business, speaking business, and so on. And I really love the title, So Good They Call You a Fake, because so many times I, like in the past 10, 15, 20 years, I would write something and the first comments I would get were like, oh, this must be fake, or this guy's just lying. He writes fiction. Like this can't possibly be true. And I was so stupid. I'd be arguing with them like, no, it's really true. Like I should have just let them babble on. Like, why did I even engage them? But
better yet, share it.
Yeah, exactly. Like you did. That was a great screenshot. Like, it draws you into the book. That was a great screenshot of that tweet of somebody calling you a fraud. Did you respond to that guy at all or no?
I didn't respond directly, but I quote tweeted it and I said, this is a teachable moment. Your results must appear so ridiculous that strangers online are calling you a fake.
Yeah, right. Like, the idea that a stranger would feel the need, by the way, and he was anonymous also. So an anonymous stranger would feel the need to take time out of their life and day to basically call you a fake when they're using the anonymous name, like they're one who's already fake. It's astonishing, really.
And it's free marketing. It's free marketing.
Right. And your point is that, hey, if you're that good, you should do this, which is organize your knowledge and skill set so that, you know, you have your system, and then these are the step-by-step ways to monetize it. Like, again, I wish I had this book like 10 years ago. It would have been very valuable to me, and I hope it'll be valuable to the listeners. By the way, I also want to mention your newsletter that you send out on a daily basis or almost a daily basis is great. Like, I love the stuff you talk about, like how AI impacts marketing agencies, just all your subjects. Like, you talk about writing books, you talk about book covers. You have one letter, which I haven't read yet, so maybe you can tell me about it right now. Yes, I work with Scott Adams. I didn't know that until I saw that. So what's the story with Scott Adams?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's tucked into the book somewhere. But some people will recognize Monetize Your Talent Stack from the subtitle. Talent stack is Scott Adams' term. We've been friends for maybe 5 years now, and I asked him, hey, can I use that? Because there's not really a better term than talent stack for that. And he said, yeah, that's great. But I'm working with him on Reframe Your Brain, his new book. That's a lot of fun. He's been saying good things about me for years.
Well, that's good.
That's been great. He's so much fun, so easy to work with. And we'll be doing some other stuff together as well, in addition to this book. But he's great.
And what projects are you working on right now for you in general? Obviously, you're launching this book, so you're going to be marketing this book for a while. What's next?
Yes. So I've been testing with my own book launch, things that are a little risky that I wouldn't necessarily recommend other people do. I haven't advised other clients to do this yet. So I'm being a guinea pig myself. And one of the things I'm going to guinea pig is in a very expensive book club. With it, a very expensive book club. Well, more expensive than a book club is usually perceived as, which should be, you know, free, right?
Right.
But something like $1,000 to take 6 weeks to read the book, and I will advise you to implement everything through chapter 7 to build your genius system. That's so good. You can monetize it. You can productize it in anything. And you can become so good they call you a fake. $1,000, I'll coach you through that. And we'll have a bunch of different people in it. I don't know if it's going to work.
If you're going to be advising everybody, how much can you scale that?
It's not quite scalable. The first iteration of something is never scalable.
All right. By the way, that is good business advice. I like that.
Yes. So that's going to be a test. Because if it works, I'm going to advise several of my clients to do that going forwards.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Scribe Media just recently shut down, and you know, we've had people from Scribe Media on here quite a bit, like including Tucker Max, the founder, and Javon McCormick, who was the CEO until the shutdown. But it seems like there's an open space now in the market of helping experts get their books published.
Yes, and I enjoy working with people as a ghostwriter, and we also do what's called ghost publishing, and that's where we like I did this for Dr. Avedia. What I'm holding in my hand right now is the Dust Jacketed hardcover, right? Like, we didn't just do his book; we did his book, and also right. The audiobook and the launch of everything, and getting podcasts booked and all that fun stuff for Dr. Avedia. And I call that ghost publishing because it's kind of like ghostwriting, where someone does all the work for you. Not just with the writing, but with the publishing as well. But we've launched something new that is scalable that we know of. It's a cohort, a done with you version of the Joshua Lysik experience called Authority Accelerator. And of course, we have author in the word authority is really set apart there. And the idea is to produce an authority book in 5 months. But the roles are reversed. I'm not writing it. The members of the cohort are. And I am the person who's not letting them not do it right. So I'm taking my own advice for the coaching here. So that means I tell them, here's your book idea. Here's a title and subtitle. Here's your table of contents. Here's how you're going to open chapter 1. So I tell them, and that aspect of it is more scalable. And so it's my brain in a coaching done with you, sort of a cohort experience. And we still produce the book at the end with the ghost publishing aspect. So it is an application only thing because there's some people who they don't have a talent stack. They don't have the makings of a system to document yet. They're just not a good fit for it because then that makes my job too hard. We need actual experts to turn into authorities. If you're not an expert, it's not for beginners, like I like to say.
Well, this is so great. I like that you're applying your own techniques to yourself and to help others. And again, the book is So Good They Call You a Fake. Great insights and great stories in the book. And of course, great writing. Josh Lysik has written 78 books. You're a great ghostwriter and you've written your own books. Where can people find you and your newsletter also?
Yeah, best place is lysikghostwriting.com, or my all of my shenanigans are over on Twitter at Josh Lysik. And of course, So Good They Call You a Fake, available on Amazon.
Thanks so much, Josh. Once again, thanks for joining us on the podcast. I'm glad you came on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends.
Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.